Hi, I am Amanda Kassar, and welcome to the Financial Secrets Revealed podcast, where I have collected the wisdom from some amazing people around the world to understand better their money story. I have financial advisors, multi-million dollar corporate executives, and those surviving on Centrelink, even running global charities. I hope you enjoy listening to the episodes as I speak with these incredible people about their stories. Hello and welcome to the Financial Secrets Revealed podcast, season two, where we are lifting the lid on financial abuse. Today, I am joined by the lovely Penny Fegan, who works 2 days a week for Your Toolkit. Welcome, Penny.
Thank you very much for having me, Amanda.
Can you tell me a little bit about Your Toolkit? What is it and how did it get started?
Yes, I would love to. So Your Toolkit is a website that has been designed specifically to support and empower women facing financial and domestic abuse, and aims to be a sort of one-stop shop resource point, providing all the information they need to change or leave their situation. It came about with a group of financial professionals getting together, and originally they wanted to upskill women broadly in the community around financial literacy to address the kind of financial opportunity gaps that women often face through not being as financially literate as men. So they got together and formed Financial Toolbox and provided free or very low cost workshops in the broad community. Then they were approached by numerous people to say, could you actually tailor this or provide a resource more specifically for women at risk rather than just women broadly in the community? So they took up the challenge and were very, very happy to do so. Did 2 years of research around what would best resource women facing family and domestic abuse. And the outcome of their 2 years of research, which was talking to women with lived experience, talking to family and domestic violence service providers, and talking to financial and legal professionals that support people in domestic abuse situations, the feedback they got was a web-based resource would be most valuable so that people can access it anytime, any place, and on any device at a kind of time that's safe for them to do so. And also a resource that had kind of taken all the information on the internet that's out there, which is a lot, and kind of curated it down to what's most valuable for people in that situation, and to provide a step-by-step guide as to how to change their situation if they want to, and to just empower them with information, advice, and further resources. So the website has almost 300 links to other sites that are relevant to people who are on the journey to change. The other part of the resource is it's laid out in four sections. So there's a prepare section for people who are kind of thinking about making a change or not comfortable in their relationship and want to exit and want to do so safely but feel fearful to start making that change for whatever reason. So that's the prepare section. Then there's the act now section for people who either through crisis must leave now or who are ready to leave. Then there's a rebuild section for people immediately after they've left a family and domestic violence situation. So that's helping them rebuild their finances, their tenancy, looking after their safety in public and in their new home. And then the final section is the thrive section, which is where someone has got the safety and headspace to start looking to the future and plan a little bit further ahead.
Wow. The website looks at covering what a person...
It is, yeah. And it looks at looking after the person holistically. So it does have a financial lens to the information and advice that's given, because that's where the organisation started, and also because research has shown that that's the main reason that women return to an abusive situation, because they feel financially vulnerable. But the resource very much provides information and advice around holistic needs for a person in that situation. So it looks at their online safety, their personal safety, legal advice, refuge advice. So it's not just financial, but there is very, very comprehensive information around supporting financial information too.
Yeah, because financial abuse is one of those things. It can be a standalone form of abuse, but it's very, very rare where that's, you know, the single form that the person's facing. Usually, you know, there's multi-levels, there's emotional abuse, there's domestic violence involved. So it's quite layered. So you only work 2 days a week with the toolkit. What is your role with your toolkit, and how did that come about?
Yep, so I actually work 3 days a week with your toolkit. That's all right. So I'm general manager. Your toolkit is quite an inspiring organisation in that it was run by volunteers for the first 2 years. So some really dedicated, capable, amazing volunteers did all the research, developed the website, or got it developed, and then launched the website. And it's only the last 9 months that there's been two paid members of staff, one of whom is me, and I'm the general manager. And my role really is now the website's launched and available, is to really publicise that it's there, that it's free, and that it's a really valuable resource for either someone who's in a family and domestic violence situation, or someone who's supporting that person. So it could be a service professional working in counselling or a family and domestic violence service, or it could be a legal or financial professional who has cause through their profession to work with someone who's in that environment and who would like to direct them to some extra support. So my role is very much about publicising the fact it's there, it's free, what it does, and how best to use it.
So at the moment, it's basically a service for the Western Australian community when it comes to, I suppose, closer services, like you mentioned, the refuges and that. But obviously anyone, both Australia-wide, globally, can download these resources, find out, you know, information through, you said, over 300 links to other resources. So obviously anyone who's got an online connection can, you know, download it and check this out.
Yes, absolutely. So the West Australia part is this specific service provider part that mainly relates to the Act Now section. So for a woman approaching the website who needed to find a refuge or somewhere to get a meal or local support, that part is West Australian based. Pretty much the rest of it, so the Prepare section and the Rebuild and the Thrive, is very generic and certainly national to Australia. So it directs people to, for example, how to check they're not being surveilled on their technology. So very practical safety tips and things to consider, and then more practical around their finances, how to set up their own MyGov and Centrelink accounts, how to approach their bank confidentially to get appropriate bank accounts set up, what to do if there's joint accounts and only one signatory on them. Things to consider that are very generic across Australia and even globally in terms of things to consider and how best to change that situation. To your point about West Australia, one of our biggest mission is to try and replicate the local service section for each state in Australia as well. We're a little bit constrained by funding at the moment, but we would love to provide that level of detail nationally too for each state.
So you've kind of touched on this area, but I'm guessing the toolkit covers people either ready to run away now, and go to safety versus people who are going, look, I don't like where this relationship's heading. I need to get out. I don't really know how to prepare. I don't know what to do. So what sort of people are you finding mostly looking at the website or coming to it as a resource?
So people tend to be coming to it at all the stages, really. So it seems to be serving people at the different stages of their journey. The prepare section, I think, does act as a preventative measure, really. So it really supports people who have those red flags in a relationship. It hasn't necessarily got to crisis point, but they definitely do want to exit. And that prepare section gives them the tools to exit in a better financial and also sometimes
more
physical position than they would.
Yep.
Yeah, than they would do perhaps if they didn't leave that early, or if they hadn't put certain things in place around their finances and safety and things like having a document checklist that it's very helpful to take with you when you go, particularly if there's some early signs of coercive control sort of creeping into the relationship where, things are getting controlled by the perpetrator already. It just alerts people to that these things might be happening, and if they are, remember to take these things with you. Remember to set this up before you go if it's safe to do so, and this is how to exit safely. So it sort of gives people the opportunity to prepare and potentially leave before crisis point is reached. So that's a really well-used section. Having said that, all the sections are well-used. We obviously check the analytics of the website, and it seems to be that it's set up in a way that people can dip into the website at the point of their decision-making journey that they're at. So they do go into the appropriate part that relates to them.
So coercive control is something we're hearing a lot more about, in the media. We've had that horrific case of beautiful Hannah Clark and her three children in Queensland, where her manipulative partner burnt her and the children to death in the car before killing himself. Do you have any other cases of what coercive control is, what it looks like, if things don't smell right to someone? What is coercive control?
So coercive control is a number of behaviours that are used to exert power over somebody, and it can be one or two of those behaviours, or it can be a whole collection of behaviours. And I believe the police have now got an actual list of behaviours that they've identified as defined as coercive control behaviours. Things that friends or family might see are a person controlling someone else's finance, a person surveilling somebody else, a person controlling someone else's body, so telling them when they can eat, when they can sleep, controlling their social situations and their sort of permissions to socialize and have interactions with people, controlling someone's ability to work, earn money, to study. So it's a whole sort of array of behaviors that serve to exert power and control over the other person, and ultimately it leads to restriction for the other person. So restriction around the choices they have the ability to make, through being able to decide where they do and don't go, but also because potentially finances or study opportunities are controlled as well, then that takes away choices for a person. And also support networks are often sort of cut intentionally, so that person doesn't have their usual or previous supports around them, and doesn't have those people able to look out for them and perhaps speak up for them, or sort of intercept some of the behaviours that are being perpetrated against them. Then there's also very intentional controlling behaviours within the home, typically that serve to undermine someone's mental health and sort of confidence in their self and their well-being. So there's, I suppose, to answer your question, there's many, many forms coercive control can take. And a person can be experiencing one or many of those, and the impacts are significant for that person.
I believe in Hannah's case, I think the inquest was quite recent, and of the, I'm going off the top of my head, I think there's close to 40 different markers that her partner had. Was it over 20 or 30 of those 40 markers? He was a very high risk case. So I'm assuming that this, you know, tick a box or, you know, style of thing will become much more used by police to understand, you know, the sort of behaviours that are being used to control. Obviously, it's pretty distressing for friends and family to see someone they know and love go through this sort of situation. And like you said, you know, the isolation comes in, the low self-esteem. What sort of things can friends and family or those who want to support do for someone who's, you know, in this situation where suddenly they feel unworthy, they've been cut off, they don't know where to turn, they may be frightened for their life? You know, how can we help those people?
Yeah, that's a great question, Amanda. And I think lots of people are unsure how to help. It's a difficult conversation. It's a complex issue. And I think sometimes people choose not to say something because it's uncomfortable and they don't want to say the wrong thing. But I think I would encourage people to ask the person they're concerned about if they're okay. Make sure they do so in a safe and one-on-one situation. So obviously it is a sensitive issue, both because a person may be fearful of what might happen if they talk about it, but also in our society, there's a lot of shame and isolation for people being perpetrated against. That will only change the more we reach out to people and the more we talk about it and the more people like you do these podcasts so that it can be discussed. So I would say if you're worried about someone, firstly, 1-800-RESPECT. So that's 1-800-737-732 is the 24-hour, 7 days a week domestic violence helpline, which also supports those who are supporting others. So that's a 24-hour support that anybody can call. So that's a really good start point. Professionals, they don't need to be counsellors. It's fine and enough to be a concerned friend or family member and reach out to that person and say you're concerned. Explain why. Explain it's your concern. It's not something they're doing wrong or something that they've done, but hold it on you. I'm concerned because this is what I see and it doesn't feel right. It doesn't look okay to me. I suppose don't be surprised or offended if someone doesn't want to share or disclose what's happening to them. That's okay. I think leave it open that you're always there if they want to talk. You understand they might not want to, but please come back to you if they ever do. And I suppose don't give up on people. On average, it takes a person 7 times to leave an abusive relationship. So. Yeah. It's so complex and has so many factors kind of woven into it, particularly if there's children involved. So I suppose be available and don't give up. Probably the most important things are don't try and give advice and certainly don't tell the person to leave. Yep. The most dangerous time for a person is when they leave. So it has to be their choice and it has to be when they believe it's the best time to do so. And I think if people inadvertently, often we don't intend to give advice, but in our language, in our conversation, we inadvertently do, or it's obvious what we think. So we need to be careful around that so it doesn't land as judgment for a person. so that they do feel that they can come back to you. I think people don't understand the complexity of the situation unless they've been in it, and it's different for everyone. So I think be an open, non-judgmental friend that listens and asks how best you can help if someone does disclose, and just be a sort of safe sounding board if that's how the person wants to use you. And if they don't, then just be a non-judgmental friend that's there and that checks in every now and then and, you know, just makes themselves known. And then if someone does disclose and does feel that they are comfortable using you as a support, then ask how best you can do that. It may be just directing them to a website such as yourtoolkit.com.au with more information and resources. It may be looking after their children while they attend appointments. It might be going to difficult appointments with them, like lawyers or police if they're making a report. It might be just having a cup of tea, or just being a friend that will check in every now and then. But I mean, it will be different for everyone, and the best thing to do is ask them.
Yeah, there's some great tips in that, Penny. I know that formula, I feel when, because, is one that, you know, we should all learn, and not just for these situations, but, you know, when dealing with any painful thing. I feel hurt, angry, upset, sad when I see, you know, you're not your usual self or whatever, because, you know, I know what you used to be like, or we used to have so much fun together. So I think that formula is very cool. And it also means you're not going, that ratbag partner of yours, he's keeping you, you know, it is judgmental, it's confronting. But yeah, making it about yourself is, you know, I'm feeling really sad to see you the way you are. Like you said, it takes away that stigma, because they're my feelings. You know, you can't really argue with them, you know, or tell me if I'm wrong. Yeah. So,
yeah. And I love the idea of I'm uncomfortable to see this kind of, uncomfortable to see that behavior, because you're worth more than that from my perspective. You know, it's a
beautiful formula to remember. The other thing, I mean, there's so many, you know, of us, and I have been, you know, guilty in the past of being a chronic fixer. You do just want to come in and go, right, I'm going to make this right. And, you know, my profession, that's what I do. I come in and I fix your finances. That's what you're paying me for. So it is, you know, this overwhelming urge sometimes we have of going, right, this is what we need to do, and this is the plan. And, you know, like you said, to take, you know, I'd heard four or five, but seven times to leave, you know, like you said, you can feel like you give up and go, oh, well, if you just keep going back, you know, and then we get into the victim blaming, you know. So like you said, it's so complex and layered, and, you know, very hard for someone who's never been through it or understood it. And even if you have, I suppose every situation's different. So yeah, some beautiful tips there, especially for the more gung-ho of us who want to dive on in.
With very good intentions, but yeah.
Yeah, often. And like you said, the person knows their own level of safety, and I think that's worth remembering, because the most dangerous time for these people, and we're talking life-threatening, you know, is when they're planning on or exiting a relationship. And, you know, we just have no idea of, you know, what's going to cause that snap, or, you know, that person to the trigger that could just make them the next Hannah Clark, or, you know, a victim of the violence. So there's some beautiful resources with 1-800-RESPECT and your toolkit for friends and family to be able to use. What sort of things can we expect on your toolkit that we could use to help others?
So as I mentioned before, your toolkit's set out in the four sections. So for example, if you go to section one, it's all the prepare. So it's things like checking your technology to see that you're not being surveilled, making a safety plan so that you've got a plan in place for if you do need to exit quickly, the document checklist of what documents it's really helpful to have with you. That puts you in a better position when you're setting up for your next steps. How to collect evidence around abuse and situations going on at the moment, setting up your Centrelink and MyGov account so you're in a better position again, that it's coming directly to you, and what other support services are around you that you might need. So that's an example of what's covered in the prepare section. Then there's links in all the sections to other websites. In the Act now, it's very much where your local services are, where are women's refuges, where you can get your next meal, what charities are available to support you further. Then in the rebuild section, it's looking at how to set up your own tenancy, how to stay safe in public, because you've then left and you're then more out and about, how your bank or financial advisor can help you as you sort of start on the journey to set up your finances individually and separately to your previous partner. How to, just checking the list, how to access legal services and how you may want to go down the legal journey depending on what's happened in the previous situation, how to keep your mail safe, and what tenancy laws and tenancy information in general you need to consider. Then more tips with dealing with Centrelink as you kind of go down that journey of setting things up and getting things organised for yourself.
I suppose as a friend or a family member, one really cool thing you can do is be that repository. You know, if you need to send mail somewhere else or if you need to put documents safely, you know, can you do that with a friend? I did have a girlfriend leave in a relationship and she told me she was able to skim now and then, you know, $20 off the grocery money to buy like food cards at Woolies or Coles so that when she did leave, she had grocery money for a few weeks or a couple of months while she couch surfed among her girlfriends, you know, to provide for her and her daughter. And she'd stash them, you know, at a girlfriend's house. So that was a very practical thing her friend could do. She was actually in a relationship and she was a journalist and came into a marriage and a girlfriend of hers was covering the Baden Clay murder in Queensland. God, we've had a few really good ones, haven't we? And she was listening to the court, you know, trial at the time, and she texted her girlfriend and went, "Everything this guy is saying is what your husband is doing. I'm so frightened for you." And it was the catalyst that she needed to go, you know, I could be the next Alison, you know, found murdered in a rug in the river. So it was the fact that someone cared enough to go, we've got to make a plan. You know, I don't want you to be the, I don't want to cover your trial. So it was a fascinating, you know, and that the fact that she had the support and the catalyst for someone to say, I don't want you to be here was what she needed. And she, look, she's come out the other side. She's remarried, living in California. You know, there is light at the end of the tunnel. You don't think that at the time, I don't think. So, yeah, there are the survivor stories that are out there. So do you have any final tips, Penny, that people can, I suppose, help those or that people who are in this situation can do for themselves?
I think in terms of what people can do for themselves, I think they kind of need to choose that themselves. But I suppose I would more speak to concerned friends, family members and colleagues and just encourage people to reach out and start that conversation if they are worried about someone. I think people have a gut feeling or have that uneasy feeling that if they're worried about someone that they care about. So I would say do reach out, do start that conversation. It can be gentle. It doesn't have to be awkward. On our website, if you go to the Learn More tab at the top, on the top toolbar, there's a resources drop down. And in that, we've got an actual kind of cheat sheet around how to support a colleague or family member or friend who's experiencing family and domestic violence. And it's got some sort of conversation starters, if you like, and a reminder of what to look out for, what to say, what not to say, and what's normal, what not to worry about. So I would really encourage that. I would also encourage anyone listening to this podcast just to consider, even if you don't know someone in this situation, just to consider the way we all talk about it. I think our society needs to change the narrative around family and domestic violence. I really think we need to And I think the media has a lot to answer for this, but I think we need to be careful we don't demonise or victim blame. I think we get desensitised to these tragic stories, and we need to sort of step up and change the narrative around trivialising the words we use about how we talk about these things. And I think we just need to talk more about it. It is an uncomfortable conversation, but I think the more it's spoken about, the more it sends a message to perpetrators that it's not accepted in society. We won't just turn a blind eye, and it prevents victim survivors feeling isolated or blamed or shamed.
So that's things like when people go, oh, well, if it was that bad, why did you stay for so long? You know, that sort of talk that, you know, is quite common. You know, if all that was happening, then, you know, what did you do there for that long? And again, like you said, we don't, you never know what goes on in people's lives. And often, like you said, it's, you know, that the money can be a massive part, and the support network that you've got with the partner. And, you know, if it was easy, everyone would walk away. You know, you wouldn't
that's
take
right.
seven goes to walk away from a relationship if it was easy to do. So yeah, you're right. It's very, very easy when you know, to sit back and you know, judge and fix everybody else, isn't it? Some good advice there, Penny. So practical. Thank you so much for your time. And, you know, I'll put the links to your toolkit in the notes for anyone who wants to, you know, find out how to support someone. One of the beautiful things I think I did read, the Courier Mail ran an article interviewing Alison Baden Clay's parents, who are now bringing up her beautiful daughters, was they started a campaign afterwards with the hashtag Say Something, because so often it's like, oh, well, that's a private matter. It's between them, you know, it's within their marriage. And they so many times, you know, dismissed watching him take the credit card off her, you know, watching her shoes get stuck, scuffed and worn, and not saying something as her parents, thinking, you know, oh, that's a private affair between them. And, you know, one of their biggest regrets was that they didn't. So, you know, like you said, if we can do it in a manner, even say, look, I'm really uncomfortable asking, are you okay?
Yeah, be honest. Yeah.
Yeah, really important. Well, thank you so much again, Penny. Really appreciate those insights there. And I hope there's some nuggets in there for people who are listening today. Thanks again.
Yeah, thank you, Amanda. And thank you for taking the time to shine a light on this issue. The more that people have these conversations, the more it helps people in this situation to be able to empower them and hopefully change their circumstance.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And that was another episode of Financial Secrets Revealed. Thank you so much for joining me. I hope you got some nuggets of wisdom out of that guest and enjoyed listening to their story. If you'd like to know more, please reach out to me. My contact details are in the show notes, or hunt down your favourite bookstore to find Financial Secrets Revealed and learn more for yourself. I look forward to hearing from you.